Hello and welcome to The Preservationists, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomist Ray, the president of the Board of Directors at Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, and the host of The Preservationists. Thank you for tuning in. The Columbia River has been a place of movement, of ships, of people, and stories. It's also a place shaped by danger, craftsmanship, and generations of maritime knowledge. Today, we're talking about how those stories are preserved, not just in exhibits, but through hands-on restoration, working vessels, and living traditions. Today, joining me is Bruce Jones, the Executive Director of the Columbia River Maritime Museum in Astoria, an institution dedicated to preserving the history of the Columbia River, the Pacific Coast, and the people who made their lives on the water. Thank you for joining me, Bruce. How are you doing today?
Great. It is a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So, Bruce, how long have you been a part of the Columbia River Maritime Museum?
I've been with the museum for 8 years. I came on as the deputy director when Dave Pearson left. And 2 years ago, I was promoted to or hired as the executive director when my predecessor, Sam Johnson, retired.
Very nice. And what inspired you to want to work with the Columbia River Maritime Museum?
I've always loved museums. I come from a maritime background, having spent 30 years in the United States Coast Guard and then a few years working with the Columbia River Bar Pilots as a helicopter pilot. And I love the Columbia River Maritime Museum. It's the one place I had said a number of times to my wife after I retired from the Coast Guard, you know, I don't really want to go back into management again, but if a job ever opened up at Columbia River Maritime Museum, I would love to work there. It's just a great facility, great staff, great mission, and a wonderful museum.
Very nice. You've stuck with it since, an executive director.
Yeah, it's an exciting time to be the director of the Columbia River Maritime Museum. As you know, we've undergone a number of expansions over the last 10 years, and now, of course, we're building Mariners Hall, which is going to be a tremendous, tremendous improvement and a venue that the whole region and certainly our community can enjoy.
I definitely agree. It's going to be a great expansion. Now, to give context to some of our listeners who may not be as familiar with the Columbia River Maritime Museum, or maybe it's been a while since they visited, what is the history and significance in the community of the Columbia River Maritime Museum?
Yeah, so a gentleman named Rolf Klepp, who's a native Astorian and a professional illustrator in the mid-20th century, had a vision to build a maritime museum on the Columbia River in Astoria, not in Portland. And he had a vision for a really grand museum, and he encountered a lot of naysayers in Astoria in the 1950s and early 1960s. But he had a vision, and he brought the vision to life, and he built support among the community for sharing the heritage of Columbia River Maritime history with others, and moved from what's currently the Clatsop County Historical Museum with the old City Hall building next to the Armory across the street to the building we occupy now that was opened in 1982. And it was really Rolf Klepp's vision to share the stories of maritime heritage with the public. And it turned out that he was right. People love coming to the museum. We have over 110,000 visitors a year, which, considering we're a community of 10,000 people, is pretty phenomenal.
And now, when we think about the mission of the Columbia River Maritime Museum and why it's such a unique place for Astoria, can you tell me a little bit about the region of the Columbia River and kind
Sure.
of that history?
Yeah, I mean, our mission really ultimately is about connecting people to the maritime world and to their shared maritime heritage. And for many people, they're not really aware of their maritime heritage. If they don't work directly in the maritime industry, they might not realize how their daily lives are affected by maritime. But almost everything we do has a maritime nexus, whether it's you're on your computer getting data coming from undersea cables across the Pacific, whether it's going to the store and buying goods that were shipped from overseas, or you have relatives who work on farms in the Midwest and their produce is shipped overseas down the Columbia River and from grain terminals in Longview and Kalama and Vancouver and Portland. If you go to the gas station and fill your gas tank, chances are that fuel came up the Columbia River in a tanker or a fuel barge. And the list is endless of the ways that we're all connected to the river. Of course, seafood, you know, fishing and crabbing, recreational boating. So maritime is just very important, and people find it fascinating. And we've been fortunate enough over the decades to have amassed a pretty substantial collection of artifacts of various kinds that people have been kind enough to donate to us. We currently have two warehouses of artifacts that people don't ever get to see. And so we're really excited to put some of those artifacts on display for the first time in Mariners Hall. And the artifact's significance is it's not so much the artifact itself, it's the stories that they tell. So each of the artifacts we have in the warehouse represents a story that's not being told. The whole team, the education staff, the curatorial staff, myself, we're all excited to share those stories with the public.
That is really exciting to be able to display those new artifacts. How does your guys' team go about researching the history of it? Is that a pretty easy process for you guys, or where do you guys start?
Well, it starts with, we have a registrar, and Meg is the specialist who works in the warehouse and identifies every single object and puts a tag on it and logs it into the computer so that we know what it is, where it came from, and understand the history of it a little better. And then as far as picking out the artifacts that'll go in the new building, that was a long process to just kind of go through the whole inventory and identify things that aren't in the current building that represent a different story, a different aspect of maritime history that we're currently not talking about. And of course, just things that are going to be fascinating to the public. And it was hard to narrow it down, frankly, to what it will go into the new building.
What originally sparked this whole story of needing to get this second building? Obviously, you guys have a warehouse full of things.
Yeah, it goes back to 2019. We had a strategic planning process when we went through reaccreditation in 2020. We got a 10-year reaccreditation from the American Alliance of Museums. But one of the things the strategic planning process identified was a need for more display space. We simply were never going to be able to display the things we wanted to display in the current building. It's just not big enough, and we can't knock the walls down. So we started in 2020 to look at opportunities to either expand the existing building or build elsewhere. After a long process and looking at lots of options, we settled on the location where the new building is going up. It's very close to the existing building, but just a short walk away. It'll be connected across the trolley tracks by a covered walkway exiting the existing building. And we are building the new building on the side of what used to be parking, but we've reconfigured our parking lots and we'll continue to reconfigure parking east of the Barbie Center so that we'll actually end up with a significant increase in parking going from 170 spots to 200 spots once the work is all done.
That means more visitors.
We hope more visitors. We certainly will have plenty for visitors to see. And as a matter of fact, for many people, they probably will go through one building and decide they want to come back on another day to see the other building because it could be a little overwhelming. We're going to have so many things for people to experience and such an enhanced visitor experience with hands-on activities and interactive exhibits in the new building.
And when we talk about the new building's name, is that a significance? What is the history of it?
Yeah, so Mariners Hall is the name of the whole project, and the building's the Warnock Building. Mariners Hall was settled on because we wanted to emphasize the new building is about telling the stories of the Mariners. It's stories about people. It's not just boats. It's not just a boat warehouse. It's the stories of all the people that worked in the maritime industry, whether those are sailors or boat builders or engineers and designers and stevedores, longshoremen, fishermen, explorers, warriors, you name it. It's the Mariners' story. And then Dr. Gerald Warnock is a very generous donor who gave us one of the large gifts that enabled us to really get this project going. And the building itself will be named after Dr. Warnock, so it'll be the Warnock Building. The overall project includes not only the new building, but last year, we remodeled 11,000 square feet of the existing building and created some new exhibits like Cedar and Sea and This Is Our Place, which are both indigenous exhibits that have been very popular and very successful that we're very proud of, and we hope people will come visit if they haven't seen them yet.
When we talk about events and workshops and the ongoings of the Columbia River Maritime Museum, this building is very active. There's many things happening.
We have lots of programs going on. The Barbie Center, of course, which is the old historic Astoria Railroad Depot that we converted into the Barbie Maritime Center about 12, 13 years ago, hosts a variety of educational programs, both for youth and for adults. We have a carving club, a weaving club, watercolor classes. We have traditional skills like half-hull model building, kayak paddle carving, and then kayak building, and just a variety of adult education classes and youth classes. We do shark dissection in the Barbie Center. We have a simulated whale necropsy for kids. We have a remotely operated vehicle tank where we bring in students from classrooms around the region, and we give them a kit full of parts, and they build a remotely operated vehicle that they dive to the bottom of this tank of water and retrieve simulated cannons from the shipwreck and bring them to the surface. So just any number of programs we have going on all the time. In the new building, we're going to have our first ever purpose-built classroom. Oh. So until now, the educators on our staff have to kind of switch back and forth between different rooms, depending on what room is available on a given day. And now we've actually designed a classroom to their standards and their specifications that will enable them to have basically 363 days a year of educational programming, whatever days they want, the classroom will be available for them. And it's really going to help us do programs more effectively and more efficiently.
Very beneficial to the community. And the
Community outreach is very important to us. We have a senior enrichment program where we have seven different senior centers in Northwest Oregon and Southwest Washington, where one of our educators and one of our curators will go to the senior center and they'll bring the museum with them. So they'll bring artifacts. And these are seniors who aren't able to travel to the museum, so we bring the museum to them. So that's something we're very proud of. We also have a program called Museum in the Schools, where we have about 350 to up to 400 classes per year in schools in Northwest Oregon and Southwest Washington, reaching 10,000 students. We open up Museum in the Schools registration in 1st of September. And this year, within 63 hours, we were booked out for the entire year. And that's just based on the great reputation our educators have and the word of mouth in the educational community. So we're really thrilled to go out into the schools in our region and offer these educational programs, trying to get kids excited about not only maritime, but science, technology, engineering, math subjects. And it's been very effective. So we're real proud of that. And we offer that free of charge.
That's amazing. I think that's super important.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of our visitors, if they aren't involved in those educational programs, might not realize how much we do in the community, but we're very proud of that outreach, and we'll plan to continue it into the future. And there is one reason, of course, that we do rely on donations and membership and also just revenue from admissions at the front desk, because we don't get any governmental support. Occasional grants, but for the other than that, it's just visitor-related revenue and donations and memberships that support the museum.
We'll return to our interview with Bruce Jones in just a moment. But first, I'd like to invite you to this month's Topics in Preservation. Topics in Preservation is a monthly discussion and conversation hosted by the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS. Located at the LCPS headquarters, 591 12th Street in Astoria, Oregon. This month, we will be viewing a slideshow put together by Ray Merritt of historical photos in Astoria and what the current photo is today. This presentation will be presented by Lori Serafin, and we will have complimentary popcorn and sparkling water available for all attendees. Topics in Preservation is open to the public and free, and we will be in the basement this month, so be sure to stop by. This will be happening on Wednesday, January 21st at 6 p.m. at the LCPS headquarters. For more information, be sure to check out our website, www.lcpsociety.org. Also happening is our LCPS Presents lecture series. For the month of February, this is February 10th, at 7 p.m. at Pacific Distillery. Come join us for a free monthly lecture series hosted by Lori Serafin and Eric Wheeler, who will be presenting a lecture on the Port of Flavelle, Oregon, and the Twin Palaces of the Pacific. They will cover the history and development of Flavelle, Oregon from the 1890s to the late 1930s. This includes Grand Flavelle Hotel, and the two luxury steamers, the Great Northern and the Northern Pacific, that called Flavelle their home port in the mid-1910s. It will be a fun evening of local history. Again, LCPS Presents is free and open to the public at Pacific Distillery. We hope to see you there. Now returning back to our interview with Bruce Jones, the Executive Director of the Columbia River Maritime Museum. So, Bruce, one thing I wanted to ask you about was, can you share a little bit about how the museum approaches the preservation of what you guys have in your museum? Because you guys have a a whole warehouse of their artifacts. How does that happen where you guys can maintain these?
Well, we're very fortunate that we were able to acquire two warehouses directly across the street from the museum. So we're one of those very few museums that is lucky enough to not only have adequate storage, but to have it nearby. In many cases, museum staff have to drive 30, 40, 50 minutes away to visit their warehouse, and we're able to just walk across the street. And we have a climate control there. We have really great industrial shelving. And again, we have our registrar, Meg, who manages all of the items that are in there. And so our curatorial staff is actually very small. We have Jeff Smith, who's our curator, and Matthew Palmgren is the assistant curator. And then Marcy is our librarian. That small staff maintains all of our collections and does a great job with it.
A lot of work to maintain that.
It is. It is. And environmental conditions are very important. The new building has a lot of glass, a lot of windows, but they're all on the north side, very little glass on the south side, because you don't want all that sunlight coming in when you have artifacts that could be damaged by the ultraviolet.
That's a good point. And with that being said, are there very many challenges that you guys face with preservation things?
Yeah, there's always a challenge. Photographs are one. So we have a lot of early photographs from the late 1800s and early 1900s, and those require some delicate care. So we have volunteers that help us in a variety of areas, but one of the areas is digitizing our collection. So we have a few volunteers that come in every week to the library and help us digitize photographs, digitize paperwork. So as these items age and get beyond the point of being able to maintain them, if you have them digitized already, at least that information is preserved for the future.
That's good. That's amazing. Yes, because digitizing is a form of preservation because you always need documentation.
Absolutely. And then boat preservation, some of our most important boats that we've preserved are the Lightship Columbia. Columbia was taken out of service in 1979. We took Columbia to dry dock in 2021, 2022. And that was a fairly expensive project, about $1.1 million in total. But it's a large boat. It needed a lot of work. So it was sandblasted, painted. The interior had a lot of work done on it. One of the primary goals of our restoration of the Lightship a couple years ago was to make more of it accessible to the public, and either physically accessible or visually accessible. So in some cases, we've opened up spaces and removed the hatches or the doors and installed plexiglass and put lighting inside so you can see in the space. But in many other cases, we've actually opened the space to walk inside. So the engine room is probably the best example. There are actually two engine rooms on the Lightship, and both of them are open to the public now. We had a team of volunteers that restored the engine, cleaned everything up really good down there, removed 50 years of grime and dust and diesel, and painted it, and it's now a wonderful place to take a tour when we're open from 11 to 3 daily for visitors on the Lightship. We currently have some volunteers working on the Duke. Duke is a cannery tender that operated on the Columbia River beginning in 1902 when it was built in Astoria at Wilson Brothers Shipyard. It operated until the 1980s, and we're going to be displaying it in the new exhibition hall. So we're really excited to put Duke on display, and you'll be able to walk into the wheelhouse. But first of all, we've had to do quite a lot of work on it, and we have volunteers that are helping us do that, and we're really proud to have Doug and Susan and Lloyd doing that work for us.
Can you tell me a bit about the type of boats that are going into the Mariner's Hall?
Yeah, so we have about 20 different boats going to Mariner's Hall. We have everything from a 60-foot George Pocock racing shell, identical to the boat used in that you see in Boys in the Boat, that really, you know, well-known nonfiction book or movie. We have a helicopter. You know, within a few years of the Wright brothers first flying in 1903. Aircraft designers were putting pontoons on airplanes and landing them in the water. So maritime aviation has been a thing for a long time. And we're going to be getting a restored Coast Guard H-52 helicopter. That's an amphibious helicopter that operated, that model helicopter operated in Astoria from 1964 to 1973 and was used for search and rescue. And we're going to have that on display in the new building. We're going to have the Merrimack, which is a classic wooden yacht built in Astoria at AMCO in 1938, 45-foot yacht, just a beautiful boat. We're going to have a log bronc. A log bronc is a boat that's used to corral logs floating on the river and get them to the mill pond. So huge part of Columbia River history is the connection between maritime and the logging industry, and that'll be on display. We're going to have a World War II Liberty Ship lifeboat built in Portland in 1944 at Gunderson Marine, We'll have an Axtell racer. Axtell was a company that made boats in Kelso, Washington in the 1940s and 50s. And we have a Pacific City dory. So Pacific City dory fishing, these are the folks that launch their boats into the surf and go fishing rather than go out of a bar through a harbor. So just a tremendous number of different boats that we'll display in the new building to tell the stories of Columbia River maritime heritage.
You guys preserve a lot, but you don't just preserve objects. You also preserve maritime skills and oftentimes craft traditions that might otherwise fade away. Can you tell me a little bit about how that takes effect?
Yeah, we've offered classes in the past on kayak building and kayak paddle carving, and we have a carving club that meets regularly. We don't do boat restoration except for the specific boats that our volunteers are helping restore and preserve to go into Mariner's Hall, but we don't have a boat building section. That would be something that would be great to have in the future if we get some interested people that want to take that on. But for the most part, it's through our adult education classes. And we've done a bronze casting class in the past. So there's a variety of skills. We're always looking for new things to offer. And it really depends on instructor availability. So occasionally we'll have an instructor come to us that wants to teach a class in a certain subject. And if it fits our mission, then we're happy to offer that.
Oh, that's very nice. That's good. So then that way you get kind of a variety of things.
Yes.
That's great. In what way is the community involved with the Maritime Museum?
We have a great volunteer cadre. We currently have about 60 volunteers, and they do everything from offer tours on the lightship and the engine room of the lightship, to work in administration, to working in the library, digitizing archives, working in curatorial, working in the store at the front desk of the visitor area where visitors first come in, docent tours. So there are a variety of ways in which community members can directly get involved with the museum as volunteers, and we're looking for more volunteers now. We're going to be bringing the historic fireboat David Campbell to campus in the spring, and we're looking for volunteers to offer tours on the fireboat and in the engine room of the fireboat. So and of course, once we open Mariner's Hall, the Warnock building, there'll be so many new exhibits there, and a lot of them will really benefit from having docents who can offer tours of different boats and talk about the new exhibits. So we'll be looking for new volunteers, and anyone who's interested can just email volunteer@crmm.org, and we'll get you hooked up. You can get any volunteer up to speed on any part of the museum that they might not have known anything about before. No experience necessary, no prior knowledge necessary. We'll provide all that training.
Great. Well, that's amazing. That's good to know. And what other projects are going on with the Maritime Museum that you guys feel especially proud of?
Well, we're really proud of our two Indigenous exhibits that opened just over a year ago. This Is Our Place is a collaboration that we've done with Chairman Tony Johnson of the Chinook Indian Nation. And Cedar and Sea is a much broader exhibit that covers the entire Northwest coast. Multiple tribes from the California-Oregon border all the way up through Washington and British Columbia and Alaska. And we have a number of highly regarded Indigenous artists who contributed the material for this exhibit. So for the most part, we don't have historic antique objects. We have, you know, living objects that were created for this exhibit in the traditional style, using that artist's expression and representing that artist's interpretation of their culture. And one of the things we're really proud of with this exhibit is that it doesn't present Indigenous maritime culture as a historical thing from the past. It's a living culture, and we've really built the exhibit on the voices of living Indigenous artists so that it reflects modern reality. And we've been very pleased with the reception it's gotten from all the groups that have come through.
And I think that that's very special, and it's great that we can kind of display that and, you know, represent the Indigenous communities.
Yeah.
And their importance in this area.
Well, the maritime heritage of our region is 99% Indigenous. It's only in the last few hundred years that it's been what we would consider the modern maritime heritage.
Absolutely. Now, when we look at the museum's vision for the future, and, you know, you guys obviously have many projects in motion with that, what do you hope to see come out of all of this in the next coming years?
We hope to see a far greater appreciation for the maritime world we live in and our maritime heritage and understanding of all the different ways maritime impacts our daily lives. We hope that our interactive STEM exhibits and our young child play area in the new building will draw more people into the museum and give an appreciation among younger people for the STEM subjects and maybe maritime careers. We are excited to offer the community a place for young kids to come and enjoy themselves, because there'll be several of the boats in Mariners Hall that you can actually go aboard. We think people are going to be excited about that, no matter what their age and what their background. We have a young child play area where we'll have a boat that kids can play on that they can't hurt, and building blocks for them to play with. So we hope young families will get memberships and come in, especially on those rainy days when you kind of run out of things for the kids to do. And we hope to just increase visitation and be able to share our stories with an even greater audience.
Now, is there one thing that you wish more people knew about the Columbia River Maritime Museum?
Well, I'm glad to have had the opportunity today to talk more about our educational programs and how many thousands of kids are reached by our educational programs and the ways we impact young people's lives. And the fact that we go into the senior centers, we offer, I think, over 20 libraries in our region now have a Maritime Museum Pass, where if you're in Klaskenai or you're in Vancouver, you can go to the public library and you can pick up your museum pass and come visit. You know, we offer, I think, 1,800 people last year took advantage of our Museums for All program, which is a national program we participate in, where if you have a WIC card, a food stamp eligibility, you show your card, you get in for just a few dollars, $3 admission instead of our normal price. So we're always looking for new opportunities to serve the public, bring our stories to more people. We have a sensory Sunday once a month where people who have some sort of sensory challenges, whether they don't like bright lights or they're irritated by loud noises or crowds, we have one day a month where you can come in when the lights are turned very low and the noise is turned off and there's no crowd. So really, I think just we're always trying to find new ways to reach the public and share the story, because we're all excited about maritime world. We're excited about maritime heritage. We're excited about what it can mean to people and exposing them to it. And, you know, some of the best feedback we get, and we see it regularly on social media and people that comment in our visitor logbook, are, you know, I drove by this museum for 20 years. I never went in because I don't really like boats. I finally came in and wow, we were amazed. I'm so glad we came in. This is an amazing museum. So being a maritime museum that anyone will enjoy and love, regardless of whether you care about boats at all, that's really our goal. And we think, you know, boats are just the medium for telling the stories about all the people that worked in the maritime world and, you know, and got us to where we are today. And knowing that people that don't have a particular affinity for boats still love the museum is something that we're all proud of, and it reflects the great work that our staff does every day.
Well, thank you so much today for sharing about the Columbia River Maritime Museum. I think this was a great way to kind of talk and highlight the importance of maritime history and culture in this area.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode of The Preservationists. Be sure to tune in again next month. The Preservationists airs every third Tuesday of the month on KMUN at 9:30 a.m. Thank you so much to my guest, Bruce Jones, for joining me this month. I'd like to give a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the staff, members, and volunteers of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and a special thanks to Camilla Swerdloff for producing the theme song of The Preservationists. Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode of The Preservationists. And remember, anyone can be a preservationist. Until next time, I'm Astronomist Ray. Thank you for listening.